Welcome to another edition of Sci-Fi on Screen. I'm your host, Jeff Palermo. And in this week's episode, we're going to be talking about John McTiernan's 1987 sci-fi action film, Predator. A little background on Predator. According to Wikipedia, there was a joke going around Hollywood after the release of Rocky IV. And I guess the in-joke at the time was, since Balboa had run out of earthly opponents, he'd have to fight an alien if a fifth installment of his boxing series were to be made. The screenwriting team of Jim and John Thomas kind of were piqued by the idea, and they sat down and they wrote a script kind of based on it. It was originally titled Hunter, and it was sort of a one-man, one-alien film. It was picked up by 20th Century Fox in 85 and turned over to Joel Silver. Him and Arnold jumped on it. Arnold didn't like the one-man, one-alien setup, so he had it rewritten to make it a team of guys out after the alien. He went after John McTiernan as a director after seeing McTiernan's first film called Nomad. It's this odd little supernatural film he made in 1986. But there was something about the atmosphere of the film. I have not seen it, but Arnold said, you know, I want this guy. So for one, you know, small film that McTiernan made, he got to direct Predator. And a couple of tidbits, they were sketching ideas for the creature in Predator. Stan Winston was on a plane ride with James Cameron at one point, and Cameron kind of mentioned offhand that he'd love to see a monster with mandibles. And so Winston incorporated it into the creature's look and, you know, kind of went down in history. So there are a lot of big actors in this film as well, and because Arnold was the star, they realized that they had to cast guys who were, you know, very close to his physical size in a way. So you've got guys like Jesse Ventura, Sonny Landham, Bill Duke, Carl Weathers, you know, recently of Rocky fame. And they're originally going to cast Jean-Claude Van Damme as the monster because he had, you know, all these skills and, you know, the monster was going to be like a kick-ass ninja. And they realized that he was too small compared to all these other big monster guys, that it would look wrong. So they went instead with a more physically imposing guy rather than like a, you know, ninja alien. Van Damme actually was shooting. He actually shot some scenes, but was constantly complaining the suit was too hot, and he was kind of complained that, you know, he's not going to be appearing on camera. They cut his butt from it. A bit about John McTiernan. He's one of my favorite action directors. This was his first big studio movie, but I mean, he has quite a track record. He went on to direct Die Hard, The Hunt for Red October, Flight of the Intruder, Die Hard with a Vengeance, 13th Warrior, the remake of The Thomas Crown Affair, and the last film that he made almost 10 years ago called Basic, this John Travolta sort of military base thriller, which was pretty solid. Tiernan had a run-in with the law, and he's sort of in the midst of getting his life back together after some jail time he had to serve. And I do hope he gets back behind the camera because I think he's a terrific director. Okay, so let's jump into the film. So we open with a starfield in a credit sequence, and after a bit, we see a ship of some kind passes the screen, and we see something detached from it and drop into a blue planet. Obviously, it is Earth, but it's not recognizable as Earth. And then we are done with credits, and we open tracking a helicopter as it flies over a small bay and some kind of military base we're getting the sense of. And we see our commando group led by Arnie, but the group exits first, and then there's a shot of, you know, Arnie last still sitting in the chopper lighting a cigar, you know, big movie star entrance that he has. His character's name is Dutch, and he's briefed by this guy, General Phillips. And so the basic plot here is that I think they're in like South America somewhere. Some cabinet minister and an aide from some South American country have disappeared in the jungle, like on the wrong side of the border, which is kind of, they say, you know, they need Dutch and his team to go get them out. But already Dutch is very sharp, and he notices right away that they're on the wrong side of the border. What were they doing there? So already he's already starting to question what's going on. And then he asks the general, you know, why me? And from a back room, we see very dramatically Carl Weathers, and his character's name is Dylan, sitting in a, you know, a room with a ceiling fan slowly going around with his shirt sleeves rolled up and a tie, you know, because you're the best. And basically, Dylan is a CIA operative, and he and Dutch used to, I guess, do ops together, and Dylan has now gone into the CIA. There's this great scene where they both approach each other and they clasp hands as if they're going to arm wrestle, and the camera focuses up on their biceps. And you see Carl Weathers, he's got a pretty amazing body, right? But Arnold's bicep is just like out of this universe. It's ridiculous. And they're just two big guys. I mean, one thing that this film will do, and I'll mention it over and over again, and I think it works for two reasons: the size of the men and the way McTiernan shoots them. It's a larger than life thing. These guys are all huge, man. And, you know, Weathers is Arnold being the star, like, there's guys in this film that match him to a certain degree. So anyway, it's a great little, you know, macho scene, and they hold arms, and of course Dylan loses the match, and, you know, Arnold wins the arm wrestling thing. So he's congratulating Dutch on like some ops that he was part of, and, you know, asks him, you know, is this great? Why did you pass on Libya? And he's like, we're a rescue team, not assassins. So we get a sense of Dutch's character, you know, that he's our good guy. And in that moment, Dutch is unaware, but Dylan and the general kind of exchange glances. So, you know, something's up already with this op. Then we get the information that Dylan is going with Dutch and his team, and Dutch like doesn't want any part of it. He's like, in general, I always work alone. You know, Dylan's like, I'm going one way or the other. The general wants him there to assess the situation, right? So already, like, the whole thing is kind of wonky. But it's a great setup. Dutch already kind of knows he's getting railroaded, but he's going along anyway because, you know, he takes orders, right? We cut, and we're in the air, and we're tracking these two choppers, and we hear this Long Tall Sally song. Very, like, Vietnam movie-esque, you know, very Apocalypse Now kind of. And we get the setup, you know, we get a little bit about all the rest of the characters, right? And what I call grunt bonding scenes. And we have Blaine, played by Jesse Ventura, just amazing, huge guy, just awesome. You know, he's chewing tobacco, and he's like, it makes you a sexual Tyrannosaurus. And then we get this repeating thing of Hawkins, who's played by this guy Shane Black, who's mostly a writer and a director. I think he was put in this movie because he was writing The Last Boy Scout for Joel Silver. So they wanted to keep him kind of close. So they just kind of gave him this throwaway role to keep him near production. So I guess Joel Silver could... It's kind of a strange little, you know, legend. Who knows if it's true or not. But so Hawkins, he tells Billy these really dirty jokes, which Billy doesn't get. And Billy's played by Sonny Landham, this huge actor, another big guy who maybe you remember in 48 Hours. The main antagonist was guy Gans, but he ran with a partner who they called the Big Indian in the movie, and that was also Sonny Landham. So deep voice. You know, basically Landham and Jesse Ventura, and there's this guy Bill Duke. They're these huge guys with these really deep voices. Like, it's fucking a testosterone factory, man, the way they cast this movie. But I think it's why it works so well. So we see them now zip line down to the jungle. The choppers bail. Already, you know, I have to call attention to McTiernan, and the direction and the cinematography in the jungle here is just wonderful. I mean, here where we're getting basically our initial sense of the jungle, but it's this misty jungle. We see the mist kind of rolling in, and he uses low and high angles all the time. It's just great. It just gives the film this added scope. So low angle shot, meaning the camera's very low shooting up. And high angle shot, the camera's very high, shooting down. So we're not getting all these sort of level horizontal shots. You know, the camera's all over the place, and it blows the film up in a really wonderful way. So they find the down chopper of the so-called cabinet minister, and there's one little Easter egg here. We see some green blood, some bright green blood, sort of at the bottom of when they're looking through the chopper down to the jungle floor. We as viewers can see a little green blood. Of course, you know, no one knows what it is yet, but it is there. So then we get Poncho, who's one of the more diminutive actors. Basically, Poncho and Hawkins are the thinner guys. And he tells Dutch that the helicopter looks more like a surveillance craft than rather a taxi for like high-level politicians. And they find out that it was also taken out by a heat seeker. And again, all the Dutch's flags are going off because they were told that these cabinet ministers and the aide were held by like local ragtag rebels, right? But he don't have any of this sophisticated equipment. So then Billy, who's the big, he's the tracker guy, so he's like the hunter in a way, tells them that not only were there 12 rebels who took the people in the helicopter, but they were followed by an additional 6 men wearing U.S. Army issue boots. So the plot thickens like right away. But the jungle looks amazing at each turn. Like there's a lot of deep focus shots. And in a way, you know, the tension's already started. We know something's in the jungle. We don't know what it is or where it is. And there's a lot of shots that linger on the jungle, which is starting to create this wonderful sense of tension. It's a great kind of moment here where Billy, he's just standing in the jungle, you know, looking and listening. And he slashes open this vine and he drinks out of it. And then everything kind of goes really quiet. And he's spooked by something. And he kind of quietly moves into the jungle, like very quiet, looking intensely. And what we do hear is the predator, what I call the predator rattle, which we come to hear, you know, throughout the film. And we hear it as an audience, but and Billy obviously can hear it, but he doesn't know what it is. And then the scare is he moves through some trees and we see 3 men who are just like completely been skinned. Gross, just blood and entrails beneath them. And, you know, everyone gathers around to sort of look at this. And they pull a dog tag from the pile of entrails. And it's this guy named Jim Hopper who knows Dutch. And basically, what we're told is they were Green Berets out of Fort Bragg. So now Dutch confronts Dylan. Dylan, you know, says, oh, I don't know anything about this. And so the mystery continues. Then we get a little thing where Billy is telling Dutch that there was a firefight, but they seem to be shooting in all directions. And Billy can't find tracks of anyone else but the 6 men. And he also can't find any evidence of the other 3 men that were supposedly there and where they left. So quite the mystery, like they never left here. And Sonny Landham is just amazing, man. He's so present, and he's got this incredibly deep voice. I mean, almost every actor in this ragtag commando group is just so powerful on screen. You know, they could lead movies of their own, in a way. You could have Jesse Ventura lead a movie of his own, big Bill Duke. Like, these are monster guys who just hold the screen. It's a tribute to Arnold that, you know, he's able to still come across as their de facto leader, both physically and charismatically, that it still works. Pretty cool. And then we get the first reveal of the minigun that Blaine uses. It's called Old Painless. And he's like, time for a little payback time. Time for a little painless. And we see that he's hoisting this freaking huge minigun. Like, that's his weapon is a gun that's normally emplaced on a helicopter. But he's got it slung on him and, you know, a whole box of armor on his back. So we know that this sucker's coming into use at some point. And a word we'll hear about the soundtrack. This guy, Alan Silvestri, did the music to Predator. And what's great is he's able to create tension mostly by the use of the drumming. So we don't get a lot of hardcore music constantly flooding the scene, which I think for a film like this, you know, guys out in the jungle moving around, you're creating tension. You got to really save the music for, you know, those moments when you really need it, like in, you know, hardcore action sequences. But most of the time in between when they're, you know, moving through the jungle or there are these scenes where McTiernan builds tension, there's this wonderful different types of drumming that just really serve to kind of put you, you know, in the moment of like, they ratchet up the tension. I think it's a wonderful thing that comes across as you're watching this film that adds to the whole experience. It's really amazing. And now we get our first, what I call Predator POV shots. It's great because we have no idea, you know, first-time viewers of the movie. We don't know what it is, but all of a sudden we're looking at the men moving through the jungle as if we were looking through an infrared scanner. You know, they look kind of weird, and we hear this strange kind of mechanical hum behind it. So it's our first little Predator shot. So they continue on. Dylan slips on a log. Mac confronts him, basically threatens to kill him, and we get a sense that Dylan hasn't been in the field in a while, that he's kind of a CIA putz at this point. And then they come upon the rebel camp filled with soldiers. There's a nice scene where, you know, Dutch very quietly sneaks up, and, you know, we're looking at the camp. It's a very A-team camp, right? How many camps like this did we see in the A-team in the 80s? So Dutch is looking around for the hostages, and he sees one of the guys, and he's shot in the head as we watch. Pretty intense little scene. Basically, Dutch sets up the attack. All the men move into position. And this is a great shot of Blaine almost tripping a wire and then him quietly disabling it. And again, McTiernan is so amazing with the camera. I mean, so there's so many close-ups. I think in a lot of 80s action movies, they date a lot because there was a lot of medium and wide shots, like in a lot of the action. And I think more and more now, like, you know, action and films, they do more close-ups and medium shots. The camera really stays close, and the films are bigger as a result. You see more full heads on screen. And I feel like for 1987, McTiernan was way ahead of the curve on this, because the camera is never very far from the action. And as a result, you have these big guys almost filling the screen most of the time. And it's very visceral. And he also does a lot of tricks with focus, where you'll be looking in plane and then all of a sudden the focus will shift and you'll see the wire that he almost tripped as a trick of focus. And it's just, man, he was so on point in this film. It's embarrassing. So everyone moves into position. They all have their jobs. Dutch's thing is they're using a pickup truck, these rebels, and it's sitting on blocks. And the engine is turning the wheels, which is turning some kind of pulley system, which is making something. I'm not sure. But Dutch throws a bunch of explosives in the back. And then we get, you know, Arnie's hero moment where he actually lifts the truck off of the blocks, drops it down, so as momentum carries it right into the middle of the camp, and the explosives go off and, like, starts the battle. So the actual action scene, you know, when I see a setup like this, I usually get myself ready for, like, you know, a boring scene of just military guys taking over a camp, right? I mean, it's just, how exciting could it be? But the action scenes are great here. Like, again, it's because of McTiernan and his camera. The camera's never far from a lot of things that are going on, and you can actually see how they're taking the place down. You're getting a sense of they have to take out this machine gun nest and they have to take out this mortar nest. And so you're kind of following along of the things they have to do. And then there's the obligatory, a bunch of them are running around just shooting things. But, you know, we follow Blaine, who's got his minigun. So we see this thing in action. He just cuts people in half to ribbons with this thing. It's amazing where there's this whine. When it spins up to shoot, is this incredible whine sound. So seeing him in action is also very cool. And we get one of Arnold's lines. Not too many in this film, actually. He's pretty straight-faced through most of it. But he's in some kind of interior bunker or interior hut. He throws a machete, like, backhanded and sticks some guy in a door. And the camera zooms up on him and he goes, "Stick around." Supposedly Arnold ad-libbed that was not in the script. So there's one moment here when the battle's pretty much over. Dutch finds sort of the main intelligence office, the command office. We see a gun come into the screen behind him, and it winds up being a woman, and she's knocked out. And we actually don't know, you know, obviously she worked for the rebel opposition, but we never really get a sense of, you know, what her role was in the camp. She just becomes someone else on the run from the Predator in this film. So then we get a report from Mac that the hostages were American CIA officers, and there's a whole bunch of Russian military advisors that were also killed, lots of Russian equipment, and it was basically nothing, as Dylan had said. There's this one point, too, where there's another line. I guess, really, Jesse Ventura gets more of the lines than Arnold in this film. It's near the end, and Pancho is standing next to Blaine, and like, "Dude, you're hit. You're bleeding." "I ain't got time to bleed." So Blaine gets a good proportion of the lines in this film as well. But the truth comes out. Basically, Dylan knew all about everything, and he sent Hopper's men in to find these two CIA guys who crashed because they kind of knew that the Russians were supplying arms and training to this cadre, I guess. And when Hopper's crew went dark, he had to call in Dutch to kind of come find them. So it's this moment where it's an early betrayal, and Dutch is like, "What happened to you? You used to be someone I can trust." And we get a sense that Dylan's kind of the cold-hearted CIA guy saying, "You're just an asset. I got smart," you know, and so on and so forth. So he's kind of like the bad guy at this point. So Hawkins is on the radio. He gets quick intel that there's another guerrilla force moving towards the camp and they got a bolt. Dylan wants to take the girl. Dutch doesn't want to, but then says, you know, "She's on you, buddy." And we get the next stage of the plot where they can't be picked up from this camp. I guess it's too hot with enemy forces in the area, so they have to hump it across the border to some place that's a little less close to the action so the helicopters can actually rescue them. Then we get a couple of things that happen before they actually take off. There's a lot of Predator POV shots here. Matt calls out to Dylan, you know, "Over here." We see the Predator actually record it, and this little like recording bar comes up when you're in Predator POV, and he's producing it, trying to, you know, learning how to use their vocalizations. And it's a great scene where, you know, Dylan walks up to Mac. Mac already doesn't like him. Mac takes out this huge knife and slowly brings it down on Dylan's shoulder and then picks it up, and it's a scorpion. And Dylan thanks him. And then we get a second time where Hawkins tells Billy a joke, and this time Billy gets it and he starts laughing. But we also see the Predator recording the laugh, and that laugh will come back in. We also get that Billy senses the presence of the Predator, and but he doesn't understand what it is yet. And then they're all gone, and then we see from the Predator point of view, the Predator enters the camp, sees all the damage that was done, picks up the scorpion that was just, you know, when we get it, it's a great kind of visual way to let us know that the Predator was right there watching the whole thing. The scorpion that Matt killed and left there, the Predator then picks it up, looks at it, and we see the Predator practicing sort of these vocalizations. All right, so now we're into, you know, sort of the flight out of the country. Again, you know, there's constant close-ups and low angles that just bring the jungle alive. I mean, I haven't seen jungle photography like this since really Apocalypse Now or Platoon. It's just beautiful. It's really beautiful, and he really captured it. His cinematographer, incredibly beautifully shot film. So we get a first instance of Anna trying to escape, but Pancho stops her. And Sonny is now out in front, and he stops. He senses something, you know, but he can't see anything. But he just stands there for a long time, and there's lots of tension building because nothing's going on. And Dutch finally eases up to him. Billy basically tells him there's something up ahead in the trees. And in that moment, then they all kind of leave Anna because they all want to go up and kind of talk to Billy. Anna picks up a big branch and she hits Hawkins, who wasn't expecting it, and starts to run off. Then we kind of switch to the Predator's point of view. So as Anna is moving, the Predator is now tracking her and the others as they run after her. So Hawkins reaches her first, grabs her, and then we switch to Anna's point of view, and we see this weird mirror-like shape come in and just grab Hawkins, and she's completely, you know, showered with blood, and then he's gone. And so Pancho arrives first on the scene. He sees the blood trail go into the jungle. He finds some entrails, and he finds some of Hawkins's, you know, equipment, and shows Dutch. Of course, they want to question Anna, and it's Pancho speaks Spanish, so what we hear is she said the jungle came alive and took him, which is great, right? They have no idea what's going on. Dylan, in a throwaway line, says the same damn thing happened to Jim Hopper. So now Dutch is like, I want Hawkins' body found, and he orders a sweep of the area. Again, McTiernan is just, he's so great at creating tension by just holding shots facing out into the jungle, right? And because we start to understand what the Predator is made up of, as a viewer, we're looking at the screen, it's almost like a Where's Waldo. Every time they show us the jungle, as a viewer, I'm like, is the Predator in this shot? Is it in that shot? Did I miss it? Where is it? And you're kind of part of the movie in a way. It's, I don't know, it's another brilliant thing, which I think largely goes undiscussed about Predator, about what he does with silence and space in this film. You know, it's not a constant rock'em sock'em gun shooting action movie. There's a lot of space and a lot of quiet. He really understands tension, and it makes the film for me. There's this great shot, you know, Dutch is standing there for one moment and we get a lot of tension, and then he moves on and the camera slowly pans up and shows blood dripping onto a leaf, continues up because the blood's now kind of dripping through another branch and up and up and up. And then at a very low angle, the camera pivots up and we see Hawkins' body hanging upside down. Like, it's chilling. So we get a false scare now from Blaine's point of view. Some animal moves. And then over his shoulder, we see behind him in one of these focus things, you know, there's a burst of some kind, and it basically goes right through his chest, erupting out the front of his chest, and he dies instantly. And Mac finds his body, and then Mac's the first one to actually see the Predator cloaked, and he sees the eyes flash, you know, inside the cloak briefly, which is really cool. He opens up on it, and it moves off, and we see some green blood splash in a leaf. And then Mac picks up the minigun and just opens up, and everyone else kind of converges on Mac, and they start opening up and basically level this whole area of jungle. You know, there's this whole moment of just blind shooting into the in this one direction. And then there's a wonderful moment of silence after where we just get to look at the jungle, and the trees are cut down. Everything's just kind of, you know, just completely cut and decimated. And then they look at Blaine and they realize it's an odd wound. Like, there's no powder burns, there's no shrapnel. Like, they don't know what caused it, but like, his whole chest is erupted out. It's kind of gross. And Anna goes up to the leaf where the blood splashed, where the predator dropped some blood, and she finds it. She touches it and then like wipes it on her pants and doesn't say anything to anyone and sort of moves on. So then Dutch basically sets up this temporary camp, and they rig up all these trip wires they need to sort of lay in for the evening to protect themselves. And then we get this little, there's this weird little kind of moment where Mac's taking first watch, and we hear this very military type horn playing in the background, and Mac's like, "You and me, bro, we were the best." You know, it's kind of like Max having his grief moment about Blaine. I guess they were really good friends. It's a little corny, but Bill Duke, you know, he's like everyone else in this film. I mean, no one's mailing it in. Everything's done with incredible conviction, especially the main big guys. I mean, they're so intense, but it's a little goofy. Anyway, in the midst of this, a flare goes off. There's some movement, and Mac, finally, we see Mac stabbing at something with his knife. He's like, "I got you, motherfucker," blah, 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 blah. So when the light kind of comes up, and it's kind of over for the moment, they realize that it was a wild boar, and Mac's been stabbing it, and they kind of give him grief about it. And they also realize that in the confusion that Anna could have escaped, and she didn't, which kind of gives another chilling twist to the mystery, like, you know, what has she seen? And then they discover that Blaine's body was taken in the confusion. And what they realize is that the predator, you know, that the boar was used as a distraction to trip the wires. And while Mac was distracted with the boar, the predator kind of moved in, took Blaine's body and left, which is really great. And there's a scene that takes place, I think just before this, where we watch the predator do a little surgery on itself, which is really cool. It decloaks, and we can see various parts of it. We don't see its head, but we see sort of a leg, we see its arms, and it's basically got a little surgery kit strapped to itself, and it's using all these implements that, you know, you'd recognize in a hospital, these little suture devices and everything, as it does the surgery. And it's very cool, very real, no CGI. And then there's one moment where it puts in some kind of a clip into its leg, and we get a brief look at its face when it screams in pain, and the others can hear that scream. And there's a moment before, you know, before the boar sequence when Poncho looks at Billy and is like, "Billy, you know something." He's like, "Yeah, I do." He's like, "I'm scared." And he's like, you ain't afraid of no man." He's like, "What's out there ain't a man." And then there's this chilling moment where he gets up and turns to everyone and goes, "We're all going to die." He walks off, and like Sonny Landham pulls it off. He just nails it. Like it's so chilling, man. It's like, "We're all going to die." It's very hardcore. It's great. We also realize after this big scene that Dutch is kind of like, you know, that it's killing them one at a time, like a hunter would. And they realize that it's using the trees to move around. And then finally Dutch like goes up to Anna and is like, "You know something, tell me what it is." And of course, because she recognizes, you know, Dutch's heroism, that suddenly she speaks English and she describes the animal in a bit more detail. But she tells him that, you know, "You must have wounded it. It bled on the leaves." And we get this great line, "If it bleeds, we can kill it." This time they set up another perimeter and they use all these, you know, kind of MacGyver-esque jungle traps. You know, there are all these things that would pull it up, and, you know, all these, you know, elaborate traps. And then they're waiting. Again, we're waiting for the, you know, the thing to show up. And there's a scene where Max just shaving, kind of dry shaving himself, and he breaks the shaver on his face. While they're waiting, we hear Anna sort of recount that in this region, there's the people tell stories about finding men skinned only in the hottest years. They've come up with a name for this thing. It's called the demon who makes trophies of man, which is pretty cool. Basically, you know, they're all waiting. We're getting a lot of tension. And then Dutch kind of puts himself out in the middle as bait in the middle of all these traps. We just wait and wait and wait. And the shots of the jungle, and we're looking for the predator, and we're waiting. And it's great tension building. And then right behind Dutch, one of these trap springs, and it's one of these nets that kind of goes up in the air. It looks like it's caught nothing, but obviously we know that the predator's in there. And it starts firing, and it hits one of their traps, and this huge log basically blasts into Poncho and knocks him down. And then there's a cool shot of the predator hanging onto a tree, and it decloaks momentarily. And we see that Dylan gets his first look at it. You know, so Dylan is now, because Dylan before, when he was walking around, before this was like, "Come on, it's two or three guys fucking with us, man. What is all this stuff that you're saying?" And now he's on board because he's seen this bloody thing. So Mac flips out, you know, like killed his friend. It's messing with his head, and he loses it. And so he runs into the jungle chasing after it. Dutch tells Dylan, go with the others. I'll go get Mac. And Dylan says, no, Dutch, you know, I'll go after him. So it's kind of Dylan's redemption moment. He's like, it's not your style, Dylan. And Dylan's like, well, I guess I picked up a lot of bad habits from you, buddy. So there's this last moment where they look at each other. Dutch runs with the others to get to the chopper. Dylan heads out after Mac. Poncho's not dead, but he's really messed up, so they have to carry him. So it's basically Billy, Dutch, and Anna carrying Poncho heading towards where they're going to get picked up. Now we got this Mac and Dylan, you know, we're back in a sort of horror movie ethos, right? You go off alone, you're screwed. Never go off alone against the monster. So at one point, you know, we see Dylan on his own, and we hear Mac's voice over here, and we think it's the Predator. And he's moving towards something, and all of a sudden he's grabbed from behind, and it's Mac. So they're both, like, ensconced in this little hideout, and, you know, they see the Predator sitting atop a tree. And Mac's got this great line. He's like, I see you. It's great tension. They decide they're going to sneak up and surround the thing. You know, as Mac's moving around, we see all of a sudden a triangle of dots on its arm, which, you know, look, it's sort of the Predator's version of laser sighting on a like a pistol or a rifle. And it's three dots in the shape of a triangle, and it moves from his arm up right to his forehead, and he looks up, and basically the Predator, you know, plasma cannons his head and blows him apart. So Mac is down. Now it's just Dylan, and then we get a quick cut back to the others, and we hear Dutch say to Anna, don't pick up a gun, and that, you know, the Predator didn't kill you because you didn't have a weapon. It wasn't good sport. So they're starting to understand their adversary, like how it operates, which is really cool. So now Dylan's on his own, and he's just kind of sneaking around the jungle and looking around, and, you know, he comes upon Mac's body, and we hear the Predator rattle, and Dylan waits and waits. Lots of close-ups on Carl Weathers. Finally, he sees the Predator, brings up his gun, but it's too late. So the plasma cannon gets him kind of in the shoulder, and he's down, and then slow-mo as he watches the Predator run towards him. And he tries to get his gun up in time, and now the Predator lifts up an arm, and we've got these like Wolverine-like metal spikes that kind of snick out. We see he impales Dylan, lifts him up off the ground, and we hear Dylan's, you know, scream, and we cut back to the others, and they realize that Dylan is dead. You know, this is kind of the last hurrah, and they're going across this log that crosses this kind of ravine. It's kind of the only way across. Billy all of a sudden throws his gun away, removes his flak vest. You know, he had this little charm necklace that he was wearing. He throws that away, and he cuts a diagonal line in his chest. He's basically making his stand. Dutch is like, you know, come on, Billy, come on. Billy just turns around and says nothing, and Dutch realizes that he's stepping up to give them time to escape. So they take off. So then all of a sudden we see the Predator's point of view rise up, and it's right in front of Billy. And then we only hear him screaming when we cut back to the others. We hear, you know, Billy, oh, in the back. So he's dead. So now it's on them really close, and it fires this plasma cannon. It disables Dutch and kills Poncho at this point. Poncho is now dead. And Dutch basically tells Anna to head for the chopper. Get to the chopper, the famous line that everyone uses. So Dutch is now being pursued by the Predator. He has no weapons on him. And he falls off this cliff into this pool, and then he falls into a waterfall, and he's dumped into these rapids. Basically, he's taken a bit downstream into some pool. So he's crawling ashore through this like muddy bank and kind of collapses. And then we hear, you know, what we see is the water splash in the middle of the pool, and we realize the Predator is right there after him. So Dutch turns around and pulls himself up, and he's completely covered in mud. But he's fucked. Like, you know, he's exhausted. He's in no shape to run. And he pulls himself into some tree roots. So the Predator's cloak is a little damaged by the water, so it shuts it off. Now, as viewers, we get a good look at it, which is great. And then we see from its point of view, it can't see Arnold because it's covered in mud, and we're not sure why. And yet, we do see it zero in on a small animal, and we realize that it finds the animal because of heat. So mostly of how it sees is through infrared. So even Dutch sees it shoot at this small animal and realizes that because it's covered in this cold mud, that it dropped its body temperature to a certain level that hit it from the Predator's ability to see. So kind of nice moment that, you know, the tables are turned in that one moment. So basically now Dutch is like got to take his last stand against this thing. He's got no, you know, military weapons except for a couple of grenades. So he builds his base camp, fills it with all these kind of traps, you know, we're getting, it's the third MacGyver trap set up, as it were. And man, Arnold looks so badass here. He's like half naked, covered in mud. He makes these explosive arrows and spears by using the gunpowder from the grenades. He applies all this great war paint. And it's a great turn of the tables now. It's like he'll be the one who's invisible now. You know, in a sense, he has gained some kind of a little bit of one-upmanship on the Predator. Then we flip to the point of view where we see the Predator. It's got a body face down on this tree branch, and it just grabs in and rips the spinal column and the skull right from the victim, just pulls it out, the body drops, and then we see ones that it polishes it, cleans it up, and like puts it, because it keeps this trophy case of skulls. It's really creepy, but really cool. And, you know, we basically see it's gearing up. You know, it is a hunter, and it collects trophies. Then there's this moment where, this is my favorite moment in the whole film, where Arnold's done with all his traps. He's put on his war paint. Night has fallen. Music starts to slowly swell, and we see Arnold's holding this torch. And he lights the torch, and then he kind of goes into this crouch where one knee's down and one knee's up. And he holds the torch high above his head, and he just roars this challenge into the jungle, you know, to his opposite number, saying, like, here I am, you know, come and get me. It's an incredible moment. I think it's like one of the coolest moments in any action film of just like, you know, if you're going to go testosterone, you might as well go all the way and not fake it, right? And this is just a classic old-fashioned, like, come and get me. I'm ready, you know. So really cool. I really like it. We see the full moon over his shoulder. Like they just, it's like Call of the Wild. It's crazy. Then we have the great tension build. Dutch is waiting up high in a tree. We're waiting and it's night and it's quiet. And we see some leaves kind of fall down and we hear the Predator rattle. So we know it's close. It's cloaked again. So it's fixed its cloak. There's a great moment where it actually shows up on the same tree branch as him, and it's right behind him, and he just stands completely still as it kind of crawls around him, like less than like a foot from his body. So great initial scare, great tension. And then as soon as it passes him by, he swings to another tree and holds tight, you know, still invisible, full of the mud. And we see the Predator kind of looking around, and there's no red anywhere. Everything is kind of in a monotone in a way. So at one point, it's standing on this log backlit by the fire, the bonfire that he lit. And Dutch shoots his first explosive arrow at it, which is great because it disables its cloak. In response, the Predator just kind of shoots everywhere because he can't find him because he's still cloaked by the mud. But he just hangs on to the tree and there's sparks. And great moment. There's some long shots, like some establishing shots of this moment where the camera's way back. And we see the Predator kind of silhouetted on a log, and these, it's almost as if it was a fireworks display going on around them. All these explosions and all these things going on. Really cool looking. So in all this kind of mayhem, Dutch is wounded a little bit. So the Predator is sort of pursuing him. At one point, he sort of hangs under this giant log, and he's hanging on just, you know, with his own strength. And the Predator kind of walks directly over it, and he's completely silent. So now we're in like a cat and mouse game. Suspense is great. And so Dutch needs to find out where it is. So he throws a rock. We watch from the Predator point of view as fires on the rock. But then now Dutch knows where it is. So he throws like his last explosive spear at it. And this time it really wounds it. And we see small pools of blood now. And now Dutch is tracking it, kind of following it, thinking that he's got it on the run. And he follows it into this cave. And it's great suspense. We get to this point where Dutch's face is very close in the camera, and we only see the whites of his eyes because of the mud. And then we get a focal change, and now the Predator's into the cave behind him. Dutch has to distract it by lighting a fire, and he barely gets out, and he escapes into the lake. But he comes up out of the lake, and now the mud is gone, so he's visible. However, he's sort of laying there with his head resting on a log, and all of a sudden, the Predator is above him and kind of locks his neck in place with these things that sort of extend out from its forearm. So basically lifts him up, and it's basically looking him over like, you know, who is this creature that has been messing with me? Throws him against the rock. Basically, Dutch is down for the count in this moment, strips off all its armor, and it's going to go, you know, now man-to-man with no weapons. And it's a great moment as the helmet comes off, and we finally see its face with these pincers for a mouth. But they're all practical effects, so you know, when it goes into a crouch and roars at Dutch, like the pincers kind of open up. And man, does it look real? I mean, it really reminded me of how real the facehugger looked in Alien. You know, no CGI here, man, and it just looks so good. And basically, Dutch gets his clock cleaned. We keep switching point of views from Dutch's to the Predator, and he tries to go at it. You know, he's punching it, but it's just beating the living crap out of him. He cannot stand toe-to-toe. And so he's like on his last legs, but he created this trap. He created this little trap where if he crawled into this little cave, this cave-like depression, on one end, if the Predator followed him, there would be a spike trap that would impale it. So he crawls in, he stops, and he turns around, and the Predator is about to come in and trigger the trap, and he's like, come on, kill me. And we see the Predator lean against the spike log, and he fingers the spikes, and he totally realizes what's happening. So he stands up and goes around the other way, and we think that Dutch is screwed, but Dutch had also anticipated this, and he had lifted this tree, this huge log, and there's a small trigger near where he's sitting. So the Predator comes. We think Dutch is dead, and Dutch kicks the trigger, and we see this huge log come down and just pummel the Predator to the ground, and like it is over. So it's fatally wounded. Then there's a moment, we think we're going to get a little horror movie false ending, because Dutch is sort of passed out, and you know, we see in the blurry focus behind him that the log is moving, and we think, shit, man, how strong is this thing, you know? Dutch gets up, and actually the Predator is trapped under it, and it's, you know, it's sneezing blood now. Like there's all this, like this phosphorescent blood all over the place, and it's pretty much gone. Dutch leans over it, and of course he goes, what the hell are you? And it says the same back to him, you know, in its weird kind of voice, and acknowledging that, you know, it's acknowledging him as a superior, you know, that he won. So then we see it brings its gauntlets up, and it's keying in some kind of sequence on the gauntlets. And the great thing is we don't need to know much. We hear the beeps rise in intensity, and we see these red things flicker on it. And it's laughing now with Billy's laugh, which is really creepy. And Dutch rightly intuits that it's a self-destruct mechanism that's strapped to it, and he just books out of there. Then the thing blows up. Dutch survives because he's behind this huge tree, so he survives, but it's a huge explosion, and we don't realize how huge until we cut to the helicopter with Anna and the general kind of circling around, and as they look out in the distance, we see a little mushroom cloud, which is just really cool. And then, you know, this last shot is the helicopter lands, and Dutch stands up, and he's full of mud and like this gray ash, and just like this warrior who survived the fight of his life. That military horn again plays, sort of the taps type of sound cue. The last shot is just basically of Dutch staring off into space in the chopper. Then we have a shot of the chopper kind of out over the bush, and we're out. And thus ends Predator. Oh, Predator. So what to say? I mean, my God. One thing that really impresses me about this movie is, again, I'm so impressed with some of my favorite movies that, you know, were done in the 70s and 80s. Terminator less so, but Alien, Blade Runner, and Predator, to me, do not date that much. I mean, because of the presence of practical effects, even Star Wars, I would put Star Wars in there as well. But most of the effects were practical, and just the way they were shot, they were not shot in any kind of style of the moment, but in very classical style. The thing about Predator is just the larger-than-life-ness of the movie. And based on basically, you know, the actual physical size of the actors, their presence, their voice, the way they, you know, the way they move. I mean, it's just an amazingly huge group of guys. And then McTiernan's use constantly of the medium shot and close-up and low angle. So many low-angle shots of these guys, you know, they come off looking like these titans that are just moving through the jungle, just causing mayhem. And it's very impressive. And I watched the Blu-ray copy that's done now, just came out. And man, if this movie came out this year, I think you'd be hard-pressed. It doesn't have the level of kineticism that modern films have, right? But it still looks classic, and it's still solid, and the action is set up well by a lot of tension. And there's not too much action. You're not beat to death over and over and over again by stuff. It breathes and has moments where you're quiet and tension, and then you're paid off with action, then you're quiet and tension, paid off with action. And it makes sense, and it's edited really well. Costume design, too. I mean, just the guys look real. The guys look like they're real special forces guys, you know? It's not, you know, there's some of it. There's some of that Hollywood kind of like, I ain't got time to bleed. There's some of that. But they also look rare. They look like a real, you know, a real group of guys who do this for a living. Not, it's not super realistic, but it's, I don't know, it's realistic in a way that really works for the film. So I never get a sense that, like, I'm just so in a Hollywood movie that I'm tagging along with these movie stars. Like, I get the sense that these guys are a unit, you know, like, it's kind of authentic in that way. I pretty much only will probably cover this film of the Predator series. It spawned a bit of a franchise. So you had Predator 2 that came out in the 90s. Basically, this was a Predator in an urban environment, faced off against Danny Glover as a cop. It wasn't badly done, but I found it kind of absurd after a while that you know, the Predator is going to be in a city. There was something about it that didn't work for me. Like, Danny Glover is going to beat the Predator, really? So I did not really like it very much. The Alien versus Predator movies are garbage. I mean, the first one has a nice little setup, but it's so low budget. The effects are so bad. I mean, it just looks like a bunch of guys in costumes running around. Then there was Robert Rodriguez's Predators, where some group of, I even forget the plot, but it's a group of criminals, or they crash land on the Predator's home planet. But the Predators look terrible. Like, it's, you know, again, Rodriguez is, he's a run-and-gun shoestring filmmaker. He's kind of a schlock guy. And it looks like a schlocky direct-to-video movie. So I don't know where the franchise is headed next, frankly. I don't need another Predator in my life. I don't need to know. I don't need, you know, the Predator backstory, as it were, the Predator Prometheus, if you will. Predator's been in comics. There's been Predator versus everybody, pretty much, in the comics. I'm not sure if there's been novelizations or not, but. And so, yeah, so that's my review of Predator. Just like to thank you all for listening. Really enjoy talking about Predator, one of my favorites. You can find us online, scifionscreen.com. You can find us on Facebook, Sci-Fi on Screen, and also any podcast app you may have on your smartphone. We are searchable. Just type in Sci-Fi on Screen and you can subscribe, get new episodes weekly as they drop. So thanks very much for listening, and see you next time.